Welcome to episode number 35 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast. This is the show where we talk about wellness and mental health within the first responder community, because I believe wellness is not optional. If you want to prosper and to thrive, then wellness must be a priority for you, no matter what you do, but especially if you're a first responder. My name is Conrad Weaver, and I'm grateful that you've joined us today. Thanks for taking time to listen or to watch this podcast. I really appreciate it. Kathy Sullivan is an artist on a mission to help first responders decontaminate their brains. Kathy is the co-founder of Ashes to Art, that refers to mindful decontamination, which addresses the need to mindfully decontaminate from a shift, just as one would be required to physically decontaminate. And you firefighters know what that's all about. She launched this program a few years ago with the help of a Northern Virginia fire captain, and we were privileged to spend some time with her and a fire company working on art. So if you want to access that information, you have to purchase our film, and you'll get it in the toolkit, in the educational toolkit. But now listen to this compelling conversation to learn more about how Kathy did this and to see how you can begin to decontaminate your brain. Hey, thanks everyone for listening to the podcast, and I'm so grateful for everyone who's joining us on our YouTube channel. If you're on a podcast audio app like Apple Podcasts, I want to invite you to jump over to YouTube where you can watch this interview and all the others. Plus, we have a ton of additional content, including my series recap from our Coast to Coast bicycle tour this past summer, and most recently, a recap of the FDIC conference that we were at last week. So come on over and subscribe to the Wellness Channel on YouTube, and I'll see you there. Thanks again for listening and for watching. And now here's my conversation with Kathy Sullivan. Well, Kathy, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. So glad that you can join me today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about you and what's your connection to first responders?
Wow. That's a story. Almost 8 years ago, I'm going to explain the story because it was quite a serendipitous story. I was on a plane going to go say goodbye to my father who was dying. And next to me were two first responders coming back from a conference, a trauma conference in DC. And they had said, they were all amped up and talking. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Trauma. Of course, they're experiencing trauma. And my degree was in expressive therapy. I've got a master's in art therapy, expressive therapy. And then I've been trained in all these different trauma techniques. So I said, oh, well, have you tried EMDR? Have you tried something called PEAT? Have you tried? And they said, no. And I said, well, these are great tools. I'll go to Virginia and I'll go introduce some of these techniques to the, you know, fire service, and they can teach their peer support, and then they can, you know, then I'd be done. And we talked the entire flight, never saw these gentlemen again. They were wonderful. And then I ended up getting in front of Fairfax County at that time, and in front of their psychologist and a uniformed captain, Captain Buck Best, for behavioral health. And I introduced the techniques, and Buck looked at me and said, that's great, but my peer support can't do that. I want you to come teach our first responders art. And I was like, I'm not an art teacher. And that's not what I was thinking. I was coming in to teach something and hit the road. And lo and behold, it's been eight years. So what originally started as something that was, he at first didn't want them to know that I had a degree in therapy or that I was anything like that. And so I decided
that because there's stigma there.
Stigma. They were the group that he was going to get to first come and see me was, he said, they're all skittish, but this group is willing to try anything. So it really was, I didn't have a therapy cap on. This wasn't therapy. This was, how did I learn art at an older age, which was in my 30s when I couldn't do art worth a damn. And in my 30s, I pick up art and I became a professional artist, and I stopped being a therapist and did this, you know, that became my profession. What was it that I needed, you know, from the universe or wherever to make me feel comfortable to do art again? And so I kind of designed it that I'd give a little bit of information And then, but then they would have to kind of finish the piece, and it would always be in kind of a fine art way, not a paint by numbers or, you know, crafty way. It was stepping outside of the box. And one of the things Buck had said is he wanted me to work on, there was such an over-identification with the fire department and being in the fire department, that that was one of the things that was going to be addressed. So I wanted to make sure that I could offer new tools that would make them step outside of their box and maybe, you know, maybe forge forward in a different way. So, and that.
What happened on the first time you brought these people together? What was that? What was their reaction? What were the consequences of that interaction?
Good question, because that was, it's so funny. I haven't talked about this and I haven't written about this yet. It was primarily women. And it, we did a collage as an introduction, me getting to know them, because that's a really super way to provide some distance. You don't have to worry about skill. And it was intense. It was not what I expected. It was intense. There, we had people that were going through a lot of things that I was not prepared for. And Buck was in the class with me. But there was a lot of bonding. There was a lot of support. There was a lot of emotions. And that was the most emotional class we've had. The rest of them were all, it was, so that's interesting that you're asking that, because all the rest of them were not like that at all. Hmm. But the first
wonder one, why, what made that difference?
I have that? No idea. Now that you're asking that, I have no idea. I think it was maybe what was going on with some of them, which really said there was a need at that moment. But and it was fun still. Like, the whole point of this is it needs to be fun. It needs to be safe. And I want you to learn something, and I want there to be bonding. Like, it's just as simple as that.
So walk me through a little bit that first event. What was the format? Were they just creating things? And then how did the discussion evolve? How did those conversations come about?
Well, the first thing was just a collage. And it was, I would like to meet you guys through your collages, like introduce yourself through me, through this artwork. And that's what's so super about collage is you can dive into weird, bizarre things. And it's fun to see where it comes from. Like, what are your interests? What are your, and I do this in workshops as well, in lectures, which is, it opens people up to such a different degree instead of just raising your hand and being like, my name is Kathy and I, you know, I've got a master's in art therapy. It's not like that. It's, I like chicken and I like fried chicken because this is where what I did with my grandmother, and you learn so much more. And so that just, there were issues going on with some of the people that they needed to vent and emote. And this was, and again, this is not the way that the classes have gone. It was only this first one. And the artwork brought them to discussion and emotions. So without divulging anything, but that was definitely the most emotional by far. None of them, all the rest have been come in and learn. And I've got to say, I think we're pretty close to about 90% of the same people coming back to the classes after 8 years.
Now, these people coming, are they just the rank and file? Are they leaders?
Everybody and anybody. And it can be anything from law enforcement to paramedics to firefighters to admin to people on leave that are dealing with some issues. And it's normally we do the art and have fun and have music playing. Sometimes we have food or drinks. And it's not heavy at all. The whole point is, how are we going to get you guys together in a way that is going to be safe and productive? And the creative arts themselves create a theta brainwave similar to meditation and yoga. And I'm going to repeat that. The creative arts stimulate a brainwave, the theta brainwave, similar to meditation and yoga. That's so amazing that people don't know that. And if anyone is interested, Your Brain on Art is a book by Susan Maximin that we were mentioned in. And it has a full breakdown of all the different arts and how it affects your mind and your body. But that being said, a majority of the firefighters I know do not want to meditate. They'll do yoga if it's offered at the fire station. But doing something creatively, and I'm talking not just painting. My classes were metalsmithing and pottery, anything you could think of. I mean, it's cooking, woodworking, forging, gardening, sewing, anything that's doing any creative act is going to put you into that theta brain state. So if you like, think about when you're in the middle of doing some sort of task like that, your mind kind of goes to a different place, in a wonderful, peaceful place, or a different removed place. And that's where we want to go. That's self-regulation. So the beauty of working with firefighters in that respect is the majority, and this is the second study or third study I'm going to be doing, is how many firefighters or first responders were trained in the arts or learned the arts through their training. Because originally firefighters were tradesmen, right? Because they needed to be skilled so that they could help with the firefighting. But it's still to this day, I am amazed, surprised, in awe, everything at how talented and how creative the firefighters are on their own. And so it's an uncanny profession. It's an uncanny, like, little pool of people that are incredibly creative. And if you think about it, every job has to have a creative solution. So every job, every job is different, and they have to have creative solutions to it. So automatically they're using their creative brain. But the amount of people that are doing amazing things on the side has been unrecognized. And if we start looking at what's going on with that, that helps us to serve first responders on a much better level regarding wellness. So it's been something that's been severely overlooked, and we're exploring it. So, I mean, incredibly talented people, but.
You know, it's interesting. Over the past few weeks, I've kind of dove head first into the TikTok world, and it's amazing how many first responders are on there.
Interesting.
That are just creating content that's creative and interesting and having conversations. And so it speaks to your idea of these people are creative. These people are wanting to create things that don't exist. And they're creating, you know, content on TikTok, or I've seen a lot of guys do t-shirts or to do other types of work like that. So I think it really speaks to what you're talking about.
Yeah. And in addition to that is, think about all the destruction they see, the destruction of cars, the destruction of homes, the destruction of bodies. So the act of creation to counterbalance the destruction of the day is so profound, so profound. And the other thing I want to say is when I came onto the scene, I thought, oh, you know, these first responders are suffering. They've got all these issues, is what I was thinking. And I'm here to say, no, the majority don't. And the majority put us civilians to shame. The regular issues were the ones that would come up with my first responders. You know, I'm struggling in my marriage, or I'm having a problem with my child, or I'm nervous about this. But the deep trauma and stuff, and the sleep deprivation and the crap that they go through on a daily basis, they put someone like me to shame. So we have to treat them as, and I think that's one of the problem with, oh, well, they need a therapist on board. They're not going to trust a therapist. They have a problem even trusting their peer support. So we need to treat them as high functioning individuals that need to be learning some self-regulating tools so that they don't fall apart given the situation of the job.
You know, it was really interesting the day that you invited us to come and join one of these classes and we got to film this. It was interesting to watch them as they started working on this art project. At first, you know, they were kind of quiet because the cameras were there and we were, you know, kind of filming them. But as they kind of forgot that the camera was there, they started talking, and the conversations that came out, wow, were just so deep and profound.
Deep. And that everyone that was at that class, that's what the classes are. You know, there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of joking. There's a lot of laughter. It doesn't matter what your level of skill is because, you know, who cares? It's the fact that you're getting together on a non-drinking, non-partying, non-traumatic way that you're doing something good for yourself is incredible. The problem with offering services is here the fire stations are in all different locations, and then their homes are, you know, usually further away. So I got all these guys and men and women off their shifts in, you know, early morning. Then that's dedication for self-care. We need to provide it in the fire stations. We need to have a national program that goes in and makes it easier for these men and women. Because I'm astounded that they actually would come to class and be exhausted and have crappy nights. But they knew that they needed something here. And the interesting thing about the class is because it was art class, they all know I have a therapy degree. They all know that I'm not going to go pick them apart. So they're good. So that's all out in the open. But what we learned is just by providing a safe place for stress relief and fun and communication, that ultimately what that did is it allowed, you know, I would get a text like, hey, when's art class next? And I'd say, I'm not sure what's going on. And then discussion would occur. It finally just came to texting me saying, do you have a second? That's what's missing in the fire department is where is that in that intermittent place, that middle ground that they can just say, I'm having a crappy day today. And this is why. Just a platform to complain, you know, or to learn. They all know I've been trained in different techniques for calming and stuff, or to learn that. But it mostly was like just complaining about regular civilian stuff. So I feel like we're not doing a service to them we need to up our game. We need to provide services in the fire stations go to them. And then we also need to find that middle ground, which this art class did, which is I'm a civilian. They can't fire me. I'm not waiting to get promoted. I'm not anything. I'm doing this for free. So my salary doesn't rely on this. And there's safety in that. There's safety in someone reaching out, and especially people who are used to reaching, who are used to being the heroes and the caretakers. It's incredibly hard, but they need someone that they know. I'm not going to report you unless I think there's a suicide issue or a homicide issue. And it was never that. So I feel like we're really missing that middle ground. And again, looking at them as high functioning individuals, because if you look at the whole, these are super high functioning individuals that, you know, that there's a percentage that has fallen through the cracks or needs extra help. So how do we keep them functioning at their highest capacity and having self-regulating skills, which I would have class and I would say, anyone who wants to stay after, I'll teach you X, Y, and Z for self-regulating. Whoever chose to would stay. And they, you know, some of the questions were, well, can I use this with a bad call? I'm like, yeah, but what are you doing for a bad call? Nothing. We're sitting at the table or dark humor and I was like, no, that's not okay. So I actually, if anyone is interested, go to our website, ashestoart.org, and there is a handbook that I did, a first responder handbook that is free to anybody that gives all of the different techniques that I've worked, that I've used with first responders that have been beneficial. It is for first responders and it is free. But that is something.
A quick question, would you mind if we put that in with the toolkit along with your,
absolutely,
your video piece that's on the,
absolutely.
So, yeah, if you can send that to me, I'll include it in the toolkit that is accessible for people who get the film.
Absolutely. We did this as it came from that one question. What can I do this on a bad call? I'm like, good Lord, what are you doing? And so I think one of the other things is I feel like there needs to be not lectures, not literature that's sent to them. That's just an added thing. I think there needs to be an experiential component that's missing. Like if they come to art and they feel relief, then they know that that adds relief. They felt it. That muscle memory, that neuroplasticity, that's what they need. But reading it and reading about suicide is not going to help them experientially. You know, their mind has already gone into a different area. Like, so I guess my goal would be at the beginning, during the academies, they should be trained in a toolbox of self-regulating skills. And then I think the fire departments should be offering in-house things like the arts, which is fun. Some of the projects I've done with these guys is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, I want to kind of dive into some of those pieces. I remember, you know, there's a couple of pieces. One, there was one that you have on your wall in your house there with all these pieces of cars that they found from accidents. And then there was one with a Coke bottle or a Coke can. So talk about some of those things and the processes that went into those.
I will. Okay. So the big collage one, it was a found object collage, and it was of all these auto wreckage parts. And I think how many people, I don't know, could have even been like 100 who have come through, who went through this art, the area that we were working in, would just pick a piece and put it on the, onto the panel. And then we ultimately spray painted it. And then there was this big fan that was spinning, and there was a beautiful photo of the Virgin Mary. And it was called Whirling Dervish because it was it was all the different crazy things that were going on in first responders' minds from all the trauma and stuff. And it was so beautiful. But what the point was, like, we're taking this wreckage and we are turning it into something beautiful. And that was such an odd thing. I even had one piece. There was another piece. I don't know if you saw it, but it was like a smashed metal piece. And the person who did it was actually Captain Best, and he took it home and he just manipulated this gorgeous piece of junk into this mask. And it was just so strong and so profound. That was really amazing. There was another, we had someone did we did masks, so I'll teach different things. Like, we did spackle on it and then we sanded it, so it looks like porcelain. So, like, we'll do basic things, but I don't want you just to make a mask. I want you to make something cool. And so this beautiful porcelain mask that kind of looked like an ancient Asian fighter with like one of those beards and like these knob things, was amazing. But then we didn't know how to what do we do with this? So we found we had permission for all of this, a burnt hose that had been flattened from a fire. And that was the backdrop to this gorge. So this horrible, ugly looking, plasticky, weird thing with this phenomenal strength and mask. And I think it was painted pink. So it was like a feminine, but strong in front of this wild, damaged, crazy looking thing. So even like teaching, like, you can take this and you can put it here, was so cool to watch with these guys. So the Coke thing you're talking about is I had been working with, a good bunch of first responders. This was earlier on, and we were going to have a show. And at the end of every, because this is where my art therapy degree would come in, because I didn't know who was coming in and what was going on in their life. So in case something had been opened up through the creative process, I always ended with something cognitive, right? Because the right side of your brain is the sensory one and is the creative one, but the cognitive one is going to give us more distance and more, you know, the analysis and stuff, it's going to give us more distance to our emotions. So I would end with a 10 or 15 minute quick little blurb on how to, like, the technicality of depth perception in drawing or shading or color or something that would be how to measure something just by looking at something. This is how you measure it. So things that I had learned in art class that I wanted to pass on, because you can do anything just from these tools. And so we were at the studio, and I was saying, this is where we're thinking of having this art show, if you guys are interested. And they were all interested. And I said, okay, well, here's an art task. And I put a piece of Xerox paper with everyone, 9x11 or whatever it is. And then I gave a piece of an image of a smished Coke can. And I said, okay, so I just want, and a pencil. And I said, okay, I want you guys to draw this. And it was just blank faces. And I think it was a table of like 7 or 8 people. And I said, just draw it. Just draw it. You guys have all the tools that I've taught you beforehand. And believe it or not, you can draw this. And once one person started, then they all started. But at this table, they were bending down and drawing, and they were looking at it and drawing. And when we were done, we put them all up on the wall right next to each other. And it looked like all of them were done by the same person on a different day. It was, so that's something I also need to write about, because it was, two-thirds of a pun right here. It was uncanny, but it was even in the show, we put this, we mounted those on like an old panel from a garage door from a fire. So we had these really great drawings on this old panel. And there were people that came to the show and said, I thought that was done by the same person. It was just in the technicality and the precision, and they all got down, did it, and put it up. It was just, it's amazing. So it's on the site somewhere. It's on the site that you can see. And that was with snippets of little training. So, I mean, the talent and the drive and you see that in the artwork, which is pretty amazing.
So what is your professional takeaway about all of this? And what have you learned? What are you working on now that kind of helps move this, you know, forward?
Well, I'll tell you the two things. The first thing was my degree is to also look at the artwork. And after, you know, some years have gone by, I had to kind of look at the artwork. And there were certain things that I was seeing throughout, pervasive patterns that told me something about the firefighter personality. So we've got the precision, we've got the type A, but we've got something that kept coming up and up was the amount of compartmentalization I saw in the artwork. And that's incredibly significant, because their brains are protecting them from the trauma by compartmentalizing, right? They go to the fire station, they've got their firefighter family there, they deal with their crap there. Then they get in their car and then they drive to their home, and that's their home hat and that's their home bubble. So they've got the fire station bubble, they've got the home bubble, and then they've got a civilian bubble. Like, you can't be too close to a civilian if you're working with them. You kind of have to have that distance. But what I'm seeing as a problem in getting to work with the first responders on a deeper level is their compartmentalization. Those bubbles are ironclad. And one thing we saw was with this class, it bridged the bubbles. And that's really important. There's too much, the same compartmentalization that's helping them is also getting in their way. So that's one thing we need to, how do we bridge those bubbles? And then the other thing is, I realized in working with these men and women that there's something we talked about. Mindful decontamination was one of our terms, because if you're required to physically decontaminate from the job, then there is a mind-body connection that cannot be denied. So if you are to physically decontaminate from the job, then you must mindfully decontaminate to be the whole person. So leadership, it's everything's mandated. You have got, it's all protocol driven, not mental health. Mental health needs to come from the top, and they need to have a super toolbox or whatever it may be, but it needs to be from the beginning in class. And when you're being trained up until the end, there needs to be some sort of protocol for this. It can be easy as art classes. It's easy, you know, they've got some yoga going on, you know, meditation's wonderful. I'm not sure how many people are doing it outside, but these are three experiential things. But I feel like in a protocol driven, if not, I've witnessed too much of these, of the different counties and different departments. You know, they've got a great peer support program, and then a new leader comes on and dismantles it. It's like, that's a disservice. So I'm seeing leadership needs to stop it, because everybody's dueling. My program's this and its name is this. It's no, it can't be that. It has to come from the top. I'm working on that. I'm with the national, the NORA, the National Occupational Research Agenda, which works with NIOSH. So I'm working on that. But change is going to occur when it comes from the top. And it's a tragedy that it's not, if it's protocol driven with the physical, it must be protocol driven with the mind.
You know, I really like that idea of, you know, that the decontamination, you know, after a big event, they're covered in soot, they're covered in all the chemicals from the fire, and they have that protocol, right?
Yeah.
They got to put their turnout gear into, send it off to get it clean.
Yep.
So I love that same idea of the mind decontamination. I mean, that should be just part of the protocol, right? That's the next step.
Period. Because I'd love to have one person go ahead and prove to me there isn't a mind-body connection. So the fact that there's so much protocol around the physical part, and then there's like nothing, you know, dark humor or talking about it. That's
because both are kind of like cancer driven, right? You know, if they don't decontaminate their uniforms and their turnout gear, it can lead to cancer. The same thing with the mental thing. Yeah, exactly.
It leads to dis-ease. Yes. So that's one of our drives is mindful decontamination. It definitely resonates with everybody because they all know the physical decontamination. Why shouldn't you be doing mindful? And mindful decontamination doesn't mean you're weak. It means the physical decontamination is protecting you. It's helping you to serve longer. Same with mindful. Mindful isn't going to be, we're going to sit on a couch and we're going to talk about stuff. There are great self-regulating tools out there. There's havening, which if people were taught earlier on, it would be, I think teaching it, you saw how tired my firefighters were with the havening, which havening is a great technique based in neuroscience. And actually, stimulating your palms, anyone can look at it. Stimulating your palms is similar to the dog therapy and petting a dog, which actually puts your brain into theta and sometimes delta, which is restorative sleep. So if we taught the first responder something like that earlier, and then the neuroplasticity didn't make it, you know, such a jar to the system. I mean, it's that kind of stuff, teaching that in, you know, in school, in the academy, so that you then can carry it through. That's just an easy, wonderful technique that the more you practice, you'll go into it in 5 seconds. So there are super techniques out there that should be looked at and presented as options, because what might work great for me might not work great for you. And the reason I feel like everybody should be trained in it is even if you may not need it, your brother or sister right next to you may need it. Right. And that's always my thing of when I'm teaching certain things is this isn't about you having a problem. This is about your brother or sister maybe having a problem and how you can maybe help.
Because that proximity kind of bleeds over to the other person, right? If I'm doing this, then you're going to be more inclined to do the same thing.
Right. And that's a good segue to our study, because our study, we did a study with George Mason University, because as I said, I realized it's a bigger picture here. And to make a dent, I need to do some studies to show specifically to firefighters, because there's so much data out there. Even the World Health Organization came out about what the creative arts do. I'm talking how many of us have put on music and you're in a bad mood and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, it changes your chemistry. So, I mean, the data's out there, but it's not there for firefighters. And firefighters are like, well, that doesn't apply. We're firefighters. So we did this study and we did 5 fire stations and put a piece of, did it with George Mason University. And put a kind of a rhinoceros kind of collage and had people from one shift were to add color to it, just 10 to 15 minutes a day. And I'm going to give you some of our results, which is pretty amazing. 91.3% reported calm or stress relief. 85% reported a sense of bonding. And I'll explain that some of that may have been that one of the pieces was locked away. 95.8% would like more art projects. So all of those are incredibly significant. But what went on is one shift would be doing it and the other shifts wanted to join in. So instead of the babbling shifts, it added cohesion and bonding. That's so important.
Wow. Yeah. Those are some high numbers. I mean, you don't see those kind of numbers in a study often.
You don't see numbers like that. So which screams to, oh my gosh, because in fact, going to the stations, I had two peer support that I said, are your stations going to do this? And they said, no. And I said, why? And they said, they're grouchy shifts. And I was like, uh-uh. So I went over and I was like, you guys doing this? Yeah. So I thought our numbers were going to be down as could be. And if anything, they all loved it. And again, I think not only is it a bonding thing, because when you watch, you like in the video of you, that you'll see for our class, there's a whole lot going on. Like people are talking, they're talking about serious stuff. They're joking. That is going on automatically while you're doing that. There's so much that comes with this. But the fact of the matter is, there were a lot of these people that were doing creative things off the job that they hadn't even spoken about. And so doing something creative was like, sure, that's it. That number was way higher than I thought it would be.
So what do you envision as being your next step to kind of bring this more to a national level?
That's a big one. I think the Nora working on that council is going to have to awaken stuff. Being on this podcast is going to awaken stuff. We've got, I know there are different cities are calling me and saying, how do we start this? What does it look like? It is not through our program. Our message is give them the creative arts, give it, do it, teach, come in and have a chef come in or someone from the neighborhood come in and teach cooking classes. Like you could do so many different things, but as a national thing, that's a big project. But getting it out there right now, I'm getting it out there in a psycho ed way. Like, look, the creative arts, read the book, Bring Your Brain on Art. Susan Magsman is Johns Hopkins. Look at what is actually going on. This has to be legitimate, especially for such high functioning creative people dealing with trauma. It's a self-regulating tool. So the data is there. Now we've got this that is specific, our study that's specifically done with first responders. That's going to shed some light on the interest. And then I don't know. I think I've got a couple more studies under my belt. I think it's important that I find out exactly how many firefighters, I need some sort of percentage, have been trained in the arts or practice it at home or learned it from the job. I need to find that out because that can change the way that we deal with wellness with these guys and preventative wellness. The fact, this is my big problem. Why are you going out there and you're teaching these guys about suicide? Why aren't you doing preventative stuff? You wouldn't ask me to go out right now and go fight a fire. You have to train me to fight a fire. You have to train the mind to get over trauma. So to prevent trauma or to deal with trauma. But the really exacerbated PTSD stuff is when you're not trained. You know, we have to have something that our body, that and with the neuroplasticity and the muscle memory, that it can be like, oh, I remember. This is what I do to calm my nervous system. This is what I do to ground myself. This is where I go to my happy place.
It's the same philosophy that, you know, that Dr. Phil Bakui in our film talks about, and he calls it pre-resilience. Pre-resilience. He said we often talk about resilience, but no, he said we need to teach them before the stuff happens to be ready to, you know, to deal with these things. So you're talking about the same thing.
Agreed, 100%. And again, I'm going to go back to I can't go fight a fire right now, but if you train me, maybe I can. And that goes back to the protocol stuff. You know, it needs to be part of the regiment here.
I want to introduce you to Chief Rob Wheatley with Cal Fire. He's their head of their wellness division with Cal Fire, and they teach a lot of these things at the academy. So they teach yoga and other, you know, mindfulness and all these other things. So I think this would be a great add-on to that, to their 100%. To their academy. They have, you know, I forget how many thousand people go through their academy every year. And I think 100%. You would be all into this. So I'll do an email introduction to you guys. And
that'd be great.
And he's a huge fan of the film, and he loves what I'm doing. And so I think he'll be really excited to speak with you
about this. So
it's interesting how the creative arts have been neglected. And I don't know if it's because, you know, it's a stigma associated to it, because the funny thing is all the masters were men. And the creative arts is, you know, we have these forging classes, which are amazing. You know, we've got it's not a feminine thing. It's, you know, woodworking. It's, you know, some of the chefs, some of the firefighters are the best chefs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, that's creative. Anything having to do that is amazing.
I think it may be overall viewed as kind of a soft thing.
Right.
You know, it's that artsy fartsy thing, you know, that, you know, weird people do, you know, they're wearing blue hair, you know, so they go out and do their art thing. But no, it's I think all of us are built to be creative, right? In some way.
Well, all of us were born being creative. So that's like, we've got this innate need in us to create and destroy. But to think about mud pies, snowmen, writing on our walls. I mean, we had sandcastles. We had to create. We had to build. And so what happens in our developmental time is we ultimately, by the age of 12, kind of, our sense of creativity is more hampered by, like, the person, this society. I have to do this for a grade. Or, right, so-and-so, Betty right next to me is a better artist than I am, so I'm not going to do it. Or the shame associated with it. And the fact of the matter is, just go out there and create. Who gives a hoot, you know?
Or the thing, like, you know, learn to color in the lines, you know, stay within the lines, you know?
Right, color outside of them just for the heck of it, you know? And there's a lot of liberation in that. And that's what the beauty of teaching these art classes with the first responders, especially because they are so regimented in their protocol. Many questions were, can I do this? I'm like, you can do whatever you want. No one's going to die here. Like, go for it. And so watching this, like, it was like this flower, like, enveloping. There was I've had several people go off to go sell their things professionally. It's like this huge blossom, like, opening up. And I just attribute it to what you just brought up. It's innate. We learned it way back when. It was in us. So to deny us and to judge that is, you know, flat out wrong.
Yeah. So what can someone do? Perhaps they're a lieutenant in a fire station someplace and they're watching this podcast and they're like, hey, I think I would like to start that in my, you know, at my station. What could they do?
Reach out to me on ashes2art.org. Send me an email. My number's on there as well. And I will help set them up. I've been doing it with different departments around the country. It's amazing. It is an amazing, easy, wonderful thing. Provide it for a little bit and just see what happens. It's amazing.
Yeah. Is there a place where your study is available publicly yet, or is that coming out?
It's currently being reviewed. So we should have. I'm under lock and key with certain things, but it will be coming out. And I don't know. I'll see what I can do with, like, some of the heads over at NORA and see if they can get this around. But it's a very significant study for first responders. Very significant. Like, those are high percentages. And then we've got some other things that need to be looked at so that, you know, we can give these guys the best care. And it's, The thing is, what firefighters in the fire department don't, like, have a hard time opening up because they're in their own isolated bubble. All this information is out there. There's, you know, there's tons of research and studies on stuff. But unless it's kind of looked at with the fire department, then it's like, well, it doesn't apply to us. So, and the good news about my handbook is I've done every single thing there with my first responders, every single thing. And it's very psychoeducational so that people, you know, it hits people in a really, some of my lectures, I've had responders say, I totally related to what you were saying there. And it's just, I don't think they're given the amount of information that they truly need. Don't teach me about suicide and what to look for suicide. Let's start at point A. You know, and so I this was by responders kind of in, and it's free. So take it and run with it.
Awesome. So I want to ask you this as we kind of wrap up here. I can see, I mean, you're really passionate about this. So I want to know why. what is driving your passion and your motivation to work on this?
God, that's a great question, because I think of this and I'm like, I was not meant to do this. And I'm like, apparently I was meant to do this. This was not in my plan, but I think I've had my own walk in life. And so everything that comes from my mouth is something I've had to learn or get through or whatever. And I think when I started working with the responders, I first of all, fell in love with the individuals. I love these people. I love them. And something I say to them is, you may be helping my parents in Florida. I'm here with you because your brothers and sisters are helping my parents and I can't be there with them. Or if I was in a car accident, you'd be taking care of my child in the back. And I feel like we have a profound need to make sure that our first responders are taken care of. And I, quite honestly, I became this like hyper advocate because I love these people and I think they are not treated well. And it's not necessarily by civilians, but they are not being taken care of. They are overworked. They are, the preventative wellness it's still lacking and it's going to be lacking as far as it with every department hitting every department and no, this is our program. No, this is our program. This works. No, it needs to come from the top to stop that nonsense. And that needs to change. But my passion's going to go away once I can. I'll always love first responders, period. Once I know that they're taken care of.
Yeah. And that's kind of my driving force too with this project and with the podcast and with the film is just we have to take care of our first responders because they take care of us.
Period. And the lives that they live, I walk into a room and I'm like, I would never take your job. Yeah. Never. I love my sleep. I love my sanity. All of that. Yeah. So we're on the same path there. And until I feel like that baton has kind of been handed off and it's on a more global kind of initiative, I can step back. We're slowly getting there. I've got a couple studies. Your podcast is going to help that. So I think enough of us around there that are kind of pecking away, I think we'll chip away and get these guys the love they need, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing people.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the program. Thank you for what you're doing for first responders and just the work is amazing. And, I was, really impressed with, our time that we spent with you, both days at your house and then over at the firehouse as well. And so I think this work, we're going to do everything we can to get this work out there and to let people know that this is available.
Perfect. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
Thanks, Kathy, for spending time with me on the podcast today. I really enjoyed our conversation. Be sure to check out the Ashes to Art website that's linked in the show notes below. And a big thanks to all of you who have taken time to listen, to watch, and especially those of you who have left a review. I really do appreciate it. And if you haven't left a review, please do so. I want to be sure I'm bringing you content that you want to hear, and your reviews help. And please remember, you are not alone. If you need someone to talk to and don't know where else to turn, you can dial 988 for help. Be sure to tune in next week for another amazing interview with an amazing first responder leader. Until then, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something good in the world.